Jules Verne is an invisible man. Probably the most translated writer in the world, he remains the opposite of a classic, a household name from Teesside to Tibet, but shunned by the school curricula and histories of literature. Although his intelligence and technique have created hypnotic page-turners, some bookshops seem unaware he actually wrote novels. The present edition is updated and revised from Jules Verne, The Definitive Biography, New York, Thunder's Mouth, 2006. It incorporates extensive new material about the radical changes forced on Verne's novels. But why study the life of Jules Verne, 1828 to 1905? Quite simply, to understand his influence on the modern world, arguably as great as anyone's. Verne is one of the most read of all writers, 9 times as much as the next Frenchman. He invented a new genre, although not the one associated with his name. His books dominate the box office. But still, their creator is ignored. The life, a black box. The crux of the matter lies in his reputation. There has been a misunderstanding of Verne's work in Britain and America. He did not write for children. He cannot be said to have published science fiction, and he was not pro-technology. Our understanding of Verne passes through generations of interpretations and byproducts. Unfortunately, the majority of works in English are doubly fakes, betrayals of censored works. Not a single word of Chapter 1 in the most popular English Journey to the Centre of the Earth, for instance, corresponds to the French original. And a majority of editions of 20,000 Leagues abridge the novel by a quarter. In the English Verne, the heroes visit the disagreeable territories of Nebraska, or jump over part of an island. Reference is made to Prunes, or Galilee, and Napoleon dies broken-hearted in St. Helens. Verne himself wrote The Badlands, Blowing Up, Plums, Galileo, and St. Helena. It is these bowdlerized hack jobs that films and commentary have often been based on. In France, Verne is the author generating the largest number of literary analyses, but his life still remains largely virgin territory. My reservation about even the best scholarship is methodological. It has invariably addressed the intellectual history of Verne's writings, but neglected his everyday life. Let us consider the following list, almost Vernian in its scope. No biography has traced Verne's family tree back to the 15th century. None has analysed his early environment. None has identified his best friends or traced his path to nursery school, to his grandmother's, or to church. No one has presented his family's links with the slave trade, his visits to Britain, or the attic rooms he lived in. No English or French biography has mentioned a full-length treasure trove about the writer's early life. No biography has benefited from a unique Borgesian collection of every article ever written on Verne, lovingly collected and catalogued by Swiss, American, and Anglo-Dutch researchers. No biographer has examined every work published by Verne. But this is still only part of the story. Although Jules Verne will concentrate on the man himself, the writing cannot be ignored. Verne's passing off and borrowing started as private matters, but ended up in court. Other discoveries include the writer's correspondence with his family, including ejaculatory and scatological imagery and banned worldwide. 1,400 letters to the two Etzels, published in 2006, and many interviews with British journalists. None of these volumes, I'm afraid, is available in English. Nevertheless, I would claim that these advances pale in significance beside one fact. The texts, lacerated by the English translators, already betrayed the novelist, for the works devoured by hundreds of millions were altered by the French publisher. Scholars have pored over every draft of quite minor literary pieces, but not those of the only universal Frenchman. For most of their existence, Verne's manuscripts remained about as accessible as the Chinese Politburo minutes. I was fortunate enough to obtain under-the-counter copies, becoming the first person to see the set since Verne.